70. The Killing Moon.
Wait.
Voza held up her fist without glancing back at the Bandogora warriors who stood behind her, and they came to a halt. They'd made their way up from the hangar toward the prison's main holding level, encountering almost no resistance from the remaining residents of this place. Not that she'd expected any. These inmates seemed to be dying faster and faster around them, dropping to their knees without so much as a whimper. The corpses, the smell of them, reminded her of Bogdan, the burial moon where so much had changed for her. Of the handful of armed maniacs they'd confronted in the prison's utility corridors, only one or two had presented the slightest challenge to her soldiers. Using their staffs, the Gora had gutted them and ripped them to shreds, accomplishing Voza's bidding with the mindless, unwavering obedience to which she herself had enslaved them. It had happened quickly. A streaking storm of violence, then stillness. Watching them go about their dark and bloody work brought her no sense of pride, although it did appease some dark and atavistic hunger within her, a need to establish dominance over the situation and impose her will upon it. For her, stability and power would always be a matter of conquest, the relentless commitment to absolute mastery. After what had happened with the Jedi and her former master, she would never allow herself to feel out of control again. It would be a form of suicide. Now she stood motionless, her mind reaching out into the rippling currents of the Force until she became aware of its most pronounced disturbance. Maul was here, closer than she'd hoped. And after she had found him and taken possession of the weapon that she'd been summoned here to acquire, she would kill him. Gladly.
This way,
she instructed them, giving the order silently, a telekinetic command that sent them down a corridor. Her heart was beating faster now, driving her forward. And it might have been that sense of reckless urgency that allowed her to walk into what happened next. Rounding the corner, she saw it. The thing to which her Force sensibilities had somehow been blinded. On either side, her warriors froze in their tracks. The creature in front of them was a colossal, gelid horror, its engorged presence filling the entire concourse in front of them. Voza realized that it was some kind of roiling white worm, 5 meters high and perhaps 3 times as long, its hooked, leech-like mouth currently filled with the still squirming bodies of the inmates it had devoured. The thing rounded on them, raising its hideous blind head with a sudden jerk that caused the severed lower half of the torso it had been eating to fall back out on the floor. When it lunged forward, mouth parts peeling back, the Gora attacked it with their staffs, strafing it with balls of energy that exploded off the worm's slick and pulsating skin without stopping it. It recoiled, flattening itself against the floor, then shot forward again with speed that defied its great dripping bulk. Before Voza could command her soldiers to step back, the worm opened its mouth, sucking two of the warriors into its maw. Voza activated her lightsabers and dove at it. Slashing both blades across the thing's flesh, she carved deep lacerations into its underside. Pale yellow fluid came trickling out, sticky and viscous, and with it, Voza realized that she could hear the voice or voices of the worm inside her head, a tangled litany of threats and pleas for mercy.
Jedi is here.
Kill us, Jedi.
Set us free.
Rip your lungs from your chest.
Tear the scream from your lips.
Devour you whole.
Voza sprang at it again, her blades coming to life in a blinding, gyroscopic storm of Jarkai technique that had served her so well in the past. Spinning both blades in the rising whirlwind maneuver, she launched a frontal attack on the worm's underbelly. its innards spilled out, layers of pulsating fat and vessel sluicing outward to fill the open corridor around her ankles. Throughout it all, Voza didn't yield or even slow her attack. Rather, she gave herself over to it completely, allowing the killing rage to transport her into a state of weightless abandon. Badly wounded, the thing reared back again, as if what she'd done had introduced it to pain that it had never known before. It jerked sideways and went slithering quickly backward through an open hole in the wall behind it. For a moment, Voza stood with both lightsabers still activated and her army behind her, all of them waiting for what might happen next. Had the thing run off somewhere to die? In that instant, she allowed herself to think that the battle, this part of it at least, might be over. Then the ceiling moved above her. Her soldiers, as one, lifted their heads and looked up. When the ceiling blasted open, the worm came spilling down on top of them with a deafening crash, flattening the warriors in an avalanche of its flesh. At once, Voza knew she'd underestimated the thing's cunning, and now she understood what those tangled voices in her head had represented. The conflagration of innate sensibilities, survival skills, and pure vicious instinct that comprised its hive mind. The last of the Bandogora warriors edged back, clutching their staffs, momentarily shaken and awaiting new orders. Voza waited, facing off against the thing herself. The worm lifted its head, its mandibles clicking and snapping audibly with a spastic, giddy eagerness. From this distance, Voza could see that the cuts she'd inflicted on it had already begun to crust over and heal. Then it opened its mouth, unhinging its jaws to the widest possible extent. The result was hideous. In that moment, the thing actually seemed to become all mouth, until the entire front of its head was nothing more than an enormous gaping black hole that, for an instant, loomed as wide as the corridor itself. This time, even the Bandogora were not fast enough. Sucking in, the worm inhaled them all in a great slurping vacuum, clearing the space around Voza in the space of a heartbeat. Yet she stood her ground, lightsabers ready, reaching out to the thing, or whatever element of sentience it might have possessed. "What are you?" she asked aloud, startled by the sound of her own voice. And although she'd hardly expected an answer, one was forthcoming, put forth in an outburst of varying tones and inflections.
"We are
that which you fear most."
Voza drew in a breath. The terrible coldness spread through her like nothing she'd felt since her early days on Bogdan, when the Gora torturers had worked day and night to break her spirit, crush her body, and drive her to the brink of insanity, and ultimately beyond, into what she'd become now. The moment was excruciating. It was like looking in a mirror and seeing her two selves. Who she had once been under Dooku and the Jedi Council, and what she'd become. Her own pitiless face reflected back at her in the soulless grasping mandibles of this blind and unstoppable predator.
"We are you."
"No," she managed, but it was too late. It came at her again in one quick lunge, and Voza reacted without thought, using an instinctive burst of force push to drive herself backward up the corridor, opening up a 20-meter gap between herself and the thing. It was enough time and space to allow her to hit the floor in a dead run and not look back. Looking back on those vertiginous moments, when time itself had become a blur and conscious thought was utterly lost to her, Voza remembered little. She had never fled from another opponent like that before, which was perhaps why it felt so utterly disorienting. It wasn't so much the worm that she was trying to outrun, but what the thing had promised her within itself. A final resting place where her identity would descend into the murk of murderers, crime lords, tyrants, and anonymous scum whose agonies would ultimately become as familiar to her as her own. In the end, she would be just another voice crying out from inside the great swollen tube of the thing's being. At last, her steps slowed down and she regained control over herself. Resolve came quickly. No one would ever be allowed to know what had happened here. There was no reason to speak of it. Coming here had been a mistake. She was preparing to leave, to find her way back down to the ship, when she heard screams coming from up the corridor. And in the silence that followed, the voice of the one she'd been sent to meet. Maul. The sum of its parts. The medical droid was nowhere to be found.
Wait, Egan was saying. He'd put down his end of the crate and was now pacing quickly through the medbay, searching for the GH-7, as if the droid might have gone into hiding somewhere. You said that it could deactivate the charges. Where did it go?
Maul said nothing. He'd assumed that Radik would meet them up here to use whatever inside influence he had to disarm the explosives in his chest. He knew from Radik's expression that he wanted Maul's insight on the lightsabers, which meant the arms dealer needed to keep him alive, at least long enough to... The wall shook hard enough that Maul had to steady himself against the hatchway. By now, the entire prison was rocking steadily around them, the tremors coming with such violence and frequency that they never really seemed to stop. Gaps were opening in the joinery overhead, where exposed wires spat and fumed with sparks.
Jagannath!
Maul turned and looked over to where the boy had already stopped in his tracks, staring down at the scorched pile of processors and components scattered haphazardly across the floor. What was left looked so little like a droid that they'd stepped right over it before. The GH-7's head and manipulator arms had been blasted off completely, and the rest of its circuitry seemed to have caught fire and melted into slag.
What happened to it?
Egan asked, his tone splintering with near panic.
We have to fix it!
That's impossible,
the low voice said behind them. Maul and Egan turned to look at the hatchway through which they'd entered. Radik was standing there, blue skin gleaming, staring at them coldly. Maul watched as Radik spread his arms wide, allowing his clawbirds to land on him. A dozen or more perched from shoulder to wrist on either side. The feathered black bodies and piercing, soulless eyes were a visual echo of his own. They made low, restless, hungry sounds.
What happened to the surgical droid?
Egan asked him.
Blasted to pieces by hostile inmates would be my guess,
Radik said.
Not that it matters now. You're inmate 10009, aren't you?
Raising his face back up to meet Egan's desperate expression, Radik shook his head.
I think your number is up.
No!
The boy yelled and swung out his fist at the weapons dealer, but the punch was wild, and Radik saw it coming with plenty of time to duck. The claw birds on his arms took immediate flight, cawing and shrieking as they swept down on Egan, going for his eyes. The boy swung his arms furiously, trying to ward them off, but there were too many of them. Over his shoulder, Maul could hear the hungry, greedy noises they made as they pecked at the boy's face and hands. All around them, the medbay shook harder, as if stirred to life by the attack. Maul's arm shot out, grabbing Radik by his black tunic and jerking him close.
Call them off.
Then he felt it. The lightsaber activating in Radik's hand. Radik raised it up in front of him and swung it at Maul. Maul ducked, the blade humming over his head.
One final match, Radik said, stepping forward. I think Warden Blur would have approved, don't you?
He paused to admire the blade in his hands.
You do amazing work, Jagannath, you know that. You must tell me your secret.
Come closer, Maul said, and I will.
Radik's lips quirked into a slight smile.
You'd like that, wouldn't you?
Maul just looked at him, into the red eyes, measuring the distance between them.
When it comes to weapons, Radik continued, I am a proud man. But
he turned the blade from right to left, inspecting it more closely from all angles.
I have no problem acknowledging the work of a fellow master's hand when I see it. Surely it's not just a matter of the geological compressor. So tell me, Jagannath, how is it that you knew exactly what my synth crystals required in order to become fully functional?
Maul moved all at once. Gripping the bank of diagnostic equipment behind him, he leaned back and swung his right foot up, driving it hard into Radik's chest. With a sudden grunt, Radik flew backward, crashing to the far wall, the lightsaber spinning out of his hand. Maul caught it in the air and swung it around just as the clawbirds came at him from all sides, dive-bombing his face and throat, their talons and beaks assaulting him. He whirled, the red blade becoming a blur, cutting the birds down around him as they screamed and cawed and swooped. Within seconds, the air was full of black feathers drifting downward. Maul kicked their bodies aside and brought the tip of the blade down to where Radik was sprawled on the floor, head to the side, exposing the throbbing vein in his neck.
Jagannath,
another voice managed, and from somewhere behind him, Maul heard a soft thud. Keeping his blade close to Radik's throat, Maul glanced around where Iagan had fallen. The boy's once smooth face was a cross-hatched nightmare of cuts and scratches from the bird's attack. But that wasn't what had killed him. He lay motionless on the floor, not far from the disassembled droid that could have saved him. It was over for the boy, Maul saw. Egan's eyes were still open, but their whites were already beginning to glaze. His lips were slightly parted, as if he'd still been trying to say something, make some final pronouncement or plea, when the charges had finally gone off in his heart.
Too bad. Radik shook his head. Not that he didn't deserve it. His father was a worthless waste of skin, and so was he.
He raised his head back up to Maul.
Shall we continue our fight?
Maul looked down at Egan's body one last time. In the end, he felt no obligation to the boy himself. Compassion and pity were as alien to him as they'd ever been. Yet Egan had stood with him to the end, and something about his death needed to be set to rights. He brought the lightsaber closer to Radik's throat.
This match is over.
Radik grinned.
Not yet.
Maul didn't see the blaster until it went off in Radik's hand. It was a pocket model, small enough that Radik must have been able to hide it in his sleeve. The shot caught Maul point blank in the meat of his right shoulder, ripping through the muscle and knocking him backward into a wild sunburst pattern of his own blood.
The lightsaber, Radik said. Give it back to me. Now.
Maul tried to move his right arm, flexing his fingers. With the tissue and nerve damage in his shoulder, he was not at all sure that he could get the lightsaber out and cut Radik down before he fired again. At this distance, one shot was all he'd need.
Suit yourself.
Radik leveled the blaster at his face.
Then I'll take it off your corpse.
Maul saw his grip tighten on the weapon, the knuckle constricting visibly behind the trigger guard, and heard a sudden grunt as the boy sprang up from the floor and threw himself at Radik.
The arms dealer hadn't seen him coming from that angle, and Egan was fast enough to knock him flat, holding him to the floor while he groped for the blaster, twisting it around in his hand.
No!
Radik snarled, trying to elbow him off and push him away without releasing the blaster.
No! No!
The boy didn't bother wasting his breath, nor did he try to take the weapon from Radik. Jaw set, lips clamped tight, his bloody eyes fixed on the task at hand, Egan simply kept twisting the blaster until Maul heard the bones in Radik's wrists crack, until the barrel was pointed straight back up at his face, and it went off in a single blinding flash. Radik's head jerked sideways and disappeared in a cloud of blood and cranial matter that evacuated itself across the wall behind him. His corpse slumped sideways into a sagging pile, the boy pulling himself away from it, then drawing himself upward into a standing position, wiping his hands on his pants. He drew in a low, shuddering breath.
So now, he turned to Maul. I guess we're even.
Maul glanced at the boy's chest, and Egan shrugged.
In the med bay the first time, when my father and I tried to escape, the droid put a needle in my chest. It must have been enough to deactivate the charges.
You knew? Maul asked.
I wanted to be sure.
Egan reached down and picked up the blaster from Radik's broken and stiffening fingers.
How's your shoulder?
Maul said nothing. And the boy tilted his chin upward, glancing abruptly behind him. That was when Maul became aware, suddenly, of another presence standing in the door of the medbay, watching them. Her arrival had eluded him until this very second. But now, he recognized it fully.
Kumari Voza.
The name twisted from his lips like a curse.
You have come.
Stick it out. Maul, Voza said, stepping into the medbay with a glance at the arms dealer's body and the boy standing over it.
Am I interrupting something?
Ignoring the question, Maul glanced at the curved-handled lightsabers that hung from her belt.
You wear your heritage on your hips.
Not my heritage, she said. My livelihood.
My master specifically ordained for us to meet,
Maul said. A new species of tension was taking shape in his chest, filling his lungs and spreading outward into his extremities as the fullness of the dark side made itself manifest.
We have business, you and I.
Voza stood her ground, feet planted, face attentive, body poised to strike.
The only business that we have is your imminent destruction.
Charging at her, he sprang up, swinging his lightsaber in a swooping hum to meet her in mid-leap. Voza was ready for him, and their blades clashed together, her initial defensive pose absorbing the momentum of the attack and pushing him backward. From the corner of his eye, Maul saw Egan raise Radik's blaster pistol, and before he could utter a word, Voza stretched out her hand and knocked it from his grasp with a burst of force push, slamming the boy to the floor.
Stay out of this,
she told him. You'll... The room reverberated with a massive crackling boom, followed by a series of low-level aftershocks. It was as if Coghive 7, having lost interest in all the routine reconfigurations, was now determined to shake off entire layers of itself.
Wait, Maul said. I summoned you here to take possession of a weapon.
Not to, but Voza was moving again, whirling backward, spinning and evading. And no matter how he tried to defend against her, his blade met open air.
the awareness of what she was doing, drawing on the Force and her own repulsive relationship with it, only made him more determined to end this battle decisively.
You're weak,
she goaded him, dropping back and making him come to her.
Your right arm is slowing you down. Even your weapon is betraying you.
Maul kept coming, relying more and more on his left arm, saving the right for when he'd need it most. But Voza seemed to anticipate everything he was doing, dropping low and then springing up and outward into an open space along a row of diagnostic machinery in the corner of the medbay. Maul's lower lip drew back to reveal his teeth. If defeating Voza was what he needed to do in order to get the weapon in the hands of the Gora, so be it. Gripping the lightsaber's hilt, he squared his shoulders and swung again, thrusting his blade at her in a series of perfectly angled slashes. Voza came back at him on the offense, both blades spinning.
Ja-Kai!
Maul snarled, deflecting her assault on reflex.
Predictable.
He swung the lightsaber down, but at that moment, the corridor shook again, jerking sideways, throwing them both off. Voza recovered first, darting back, again too quick, and the speed with which she evaded his attack only inflamed the rage inside Maul's mind, stoking his wrath until it crystallized into a kind of malignant grace. Now he gripped the lightsaber in both arms, forcing his damaged right arm into service and gripping the hilt of his saber with his full strength. It was time for Juyo, the Way of the Vornskr, the last of the seven forms. He seized upon it eagerly, allowing himself to be swept up in the chaotic frontal assault of thrusts, slashes, and jabs.
Maul!
A tremor of new fear pulsed across Voza's face, disrupting her composure, as if she'd finally recognized the true ferocity of his purpose. Darting backward into a desperate evasive measure, Voza whirled one of her blades behind her, hacking loose a massive shelf of surgical instruments from its place on the wall, and with a swing of the hand, she used a force push to fire them at him in a glinting storm of steel. Maul ducked the flying instruments and bobbed back up with a silent snarl. In his mind, the duel was all but over. His opponent was now dragging out the inevitable moment of defeat in a series of small humiliations. By turning to such diversionary tactics, Voza had all but admitted that she was no match for the erratic staccato blows that he was delivering, seemingly from everywhere, all at once.
Kill her now. Then you may deliver the weapon to any of the Bandor Gora who remain.
Pivoting easily, he swung out at her, the dark side screaming so powerfully from him now that it seemed to be pouring forth in great explosive torrents. His blade was moving almost too fast to see, cutting great fan-shaped swaths in the air around him. All around them, the whole world seemed to be blowing itself to pieces. Voza went low, swinging out one leg in a last fruitless attempt to catch him off balance, and he brought the lightsaber down in a great hungry arc, holding off just long enough to savor the expression on her face.
Now, plead for your life.
Sorry.
She tilted her chin up at him, wiped the blood from her lip and grinned.
You're going to have to try a lot harder than that.
Before he could respond, she rammed the top of her skull into his shoulder, headbutting the open wound. A rocket of white-hot fury sizzled inside Maul's forebrain, all but obliterating conscious thought. He let out a roar and prepared to finish her off. That was when the floor erupted beneath them, the alloy plates bursting open to reveal something so vast and incomprehensible that Maul didn't recognize it until it tried to bite his leg off. With a jolt of shock, he saw that the thing that had exploded upward had already taken his foot into the hideous suction cup of its mouth.
The worm.
Its appearance here provided Komari Voza the last opportunity she needed to right herself and make her escape, leaping upward and then bounding off the wall console behind her.
Coward!
A voice shouted from inside Maul's brain.
Weakling! Jedi scum!
It is exactly like your kind to flee at the first sign of...
In that split second, the thought broke off as he realized that she wasn't running away. She was coming at the worm.